Next matter on the list is Ian Hill Limited.
Just while they're up there, I'd just like to leave you with the thought, and we'll do this thought later. And I'm not even going to tell you what it is yet, but you'll probably guess. And just watch the ball. Just watch the ball again. Right, we'll leave you with that for later. I'll show you later and explain it.
The length of the hill might affect runoff as well as slope.
You're very quick. And the amount of accumulation.
Yeah. So if you just want to go through them, it's just the 2 hours.
That's the point that's been made by other submitters as well.
So. The same.
But not as
bad. Well, I had to bring it. I thought it was going to rain today. Yeah,
fair enough.
You're sitting here.
Well, good morning and welcome. We've read the original submission that you lodged and also all of the material that you've lodged since then, so thank you very much for providing all of that. You don't need to reread any of that material out to us that we've already got, but you're very welcome to speak to that and to highlight key points for us.
I'd like to read a little bit first, just to introduce ourselves. It's
sure.
Ian Hill Limited. It's owned by Ian and Heather Smith,
yep.
Ian and Heather, and we're also supported by Doug Stanley, our farm advisor and accountant, here on my left. It's a family farm, we're third generation, and trying to economically provide opportunity for the fourth generation, of which there is four children sitting out there, not all wanting to go farming, but certainly have a strong interest in the farm. You can see on the map where our farm is. We noticed the other day that a question was asked, where are we? And where do we farm, for those that don't live in Southland? And it's down at the mouth of the Matara River.
Oh, I've got the wrong one, sorry.
Great big middle button.
Yeah, sorry. Which is the point of the middle one?
So the Matara River runs through the gore, and it comes out of Fort Rose.
The Matara River comes down through the
end. Yeah. That's helpful, thank you.
But we don't feed the Matara, we feed the Fort Rose estuary through another water system.
Right.
Which one do we go forward from?
The arrow on the right.
This one?
No, the
right.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
We're a family-owned dairy, sheep and beef property, mostly self-contained and classified in the Bedrock Hill Country Zone. Ian and Heather are both involved in the community, farming and the outdoors, tramping throughout our lives. More than once, we've had the ability to bring the farming and conservation lobby together to get an understanding and a practical solution. This farm has a loyal and interested family following.
I'm backwards, have I?
No, you just
read
in what order you put
them. I must have jumped out of order, sorry about this, yeah. Right.
In March 2017, our third annual Cousins Day was held, with 30 attending, covering four generations. So that is one side of the family interested in the future of this farm and from their history.
And this is the other side of the family
the
that was important to the farm.
Some quotes from our farm mission statement. Look after the farm and environment, and it will look after you. We do not inherit from our parents. We borrow from our children. We believe everyone needs a farmer 3 times a day, whether meat lover or vegan or somewhere in between. We have an environmental focus. We have numerous internal shelter belts, over 26 hectares of plantation trees growing, 12 hectares of waterway fenced off to a minimum of 3 metres, 24 k's of fencing, which covers 7.16 hectares, more riparian planting and small plantations focusing on critical source, and some shelter belts planned over the next decade. Pass it on to Ian.
And there's one other quote that I remember that my brother reminded me of yesterday, that my grandfather had given to my cousin. When the grass stops growing on the farms, it starts growing in the streets. So that was a quote that he may have said to me once, but I cannot have not remembered it. So it's when the grass stops growing on the farms, it starts growing in the streets. this is the first time since the farm was purchased, and you've probably got this down, that there's only one generation living on the farm, and they're in their 60s. Even though the farm has grown from 413 hectares. 2 years ago, we put a dairy conversion on, and now we employ 4.5 people. And then we probably thought the future was more achievable. We have put in some quite new systems into the dairy unit. If you look at effluent system there, it incorporates greenwash, so our cow yard is washed with greenwash, and it's put back into the double pond, and then the application goes on, our effluent application goes on, and it only takes 1 millimetre of application for our dairy shed on the ground each day. So it's spread at 1 metre, it's not even heavy application. We have a big focus on water. We have big water storage because we are short of water in our area. And our farm produces 1 litre of milk, and it only takes 10 litres of water. That's cow drinking, shed wash and everything. It takes up to 250 litres of water for 1 litre of milk in other parts of New Zealand. So we put a very big focus on that, and I have my brother with me who does infrastructure, and he will, if you ask, don't ask too much, you get too much detail. Yeah, but. And he tells me the annual consumption of water, annual consumption of water on a dairy unit is what falls on 1.2 hectares of our farm. So we only use what would fall annually on 1.2 hectares. The proposed water and land plan is little recognition of the way we farm. It will put severe pressure on our economic survivability of this farm. While there's understand the need to improve water quality, there is evidence that water quality is stable over 5 to 10 years. One size plan does not fit a diverse farming province. There is little recognition for good farming practices. Now, I'd just like to talk about some of the rules and calving pads as per submission, and I think you've read that, and it's to me it's stupid to allow 100 cows on a calving pad, on a watering pad where it's only 50 acres. I think you've got to look at something like that. If we look at winter cropping area, we currently have 16% of our ground into winter crop. Yeah, I'm trying to find the right picture, sorry. This is some more shots of the farm. You can see the fenced off waterways, see the trees with the gum trees around the edge of them. See quite a number of trees involved, lane system up farm. This is coming into the cows, coming to the cow shed. You can see the effluent pond set up there. This shed's only been there for 2 years. We've got the riparian flaxes, tussocks growing in the middle, and some cabbage trees, and even now there's some lancewoods in there now. And that was just taken yesterday, that photograph, so it was wet. More fenced off waterways and part of our runoff property. And just like Laurie Patterson said, that farm was all gorse when we brought it over. Working the ground was the only way to control it, and continually working the ground was the best way to control it. I totally support those statements. I've looked at neighbours with properties and blocks that they've sprayed. They're back there 5 or 8 years again, spray, and it's not disappearing. So, and we have about 23 critical source areas, and even up to 30 on the property now that are still available. And there's one there, up in there. And it has quite an impact on our farm and the slope and the critical source areas. We have a number of critical source areas and trees, but the economics of going further is slow. There's a duck pond, and we're fenced off, and you see the fenced off waterways following down it and right down to the road. another duck pond, we put a system. This top end here is very, very shallow, but we put in a collection area and also to put wetland trees around the top of. And the second pond is down further as the main collection pond. We've started down the side of one of our lanes, and this is a big fenced off area, as a heritage orchard in a very sheltered place. Now we're looking at some of the property, and we're looking at some of the crop ground in our property with the balers set out. From over here you can still see more trees and gums around the side of them. And then we're looking at crop ground. If you start looking at the crop ground here, you can see all cuts all over the place, and this is the way we farm and keep our crop ground from a waterway. So we start at the top, we work our way around the edges, leave the buffer zone, and then take the buffer zone out later. And you see cows on there, and that was just taken yesterday. We've had a tremendous downpour of rain the last 2 days. You can see the way the cows are contained. And I'll have to say we're up to 35 degrees on some of that, 32 degrees on the very top end of that. A lot of that is between 20 and 30 degrees slope.
You've got an app on, Ian's got an app on his phone as well.
That does that. And then if we look at this one, just sorry the sun was wrong, but that's a paddock we took heifers off yesterday. And they're just eating around the side. Now, we, by our process of holding back that side, I don't think you can see any hint of runoff on there at all, because what we do is we eat that first side bit and then we fence it off after it's eaten that day, go back in retention and hold the next bit and fence it off. So we're not fencing across the paddock, we're trying to fence around the paddock for environmental purposes. And we're probably in the mid 20s on there, degree slope. We'll come back to this later. This is where Doug will come in later, but this is how the 20 degree slope will affect our property and the riparian. This is done. This will be about 90% correct. My brother has spent a number of hours on Google Earth doing this. If we look at the other properties to do with it, so we'll go back to. What's a good photo starter? Probably good one. So what we're asking is a maximum of 100 cows on a carving pad or 50 hectares of winter crop as a permitted activity the right way to go? If you take it to its final conclusion, the average dairy farm in Southland is 211 hectares. The average sheep and beef farm is 263 hectares. Now, on the dairy farm, it would be 24% of the land would be permitted to put into crop. On the average farm in Southland, we're above average, it would be 19% on the sheep and beef property. It's a big difference from the 15 to 20% we're talking about originally. We have extensively, what we should say is that the smaller properties and the better land have better crop yields too. We have extensively experimented with direct drilling with very mixed results, and we've done that for 30 years. Very mixed results. If the season's exactly right, you'll get a good result. If the season's not right, it's very mixed. And last year, a neighbour bet me with all my crops, work crops on with direct drilling. This year he's envious over the fence because mine's got three times the yield on it. And we're only in the our yields are in the 12 to 16 tonnes maximum, sometimes down to 9 for the type of ground we've got. Our calculations show a decrease in stock numbers in Southland since 1994 to 2015. And by going by Statistics New Zealand and beef and lamb figures and using 7 for a cow, if you use 1 for a sheep, has come down 1.5 of a million, 9.5 million to 9 million roughly. So there has been, and that's really to challenge the 42A report and the report that says that we've had an increase of 40 to 50,000 stock in Southland per year since 1994. Surely good management principles and sound, well-constructed management plans are the way forward. An example, one lump application, a fertiliser application, is it better than strategic multi-placed applications over the season? Is it better for the environment? I question whether it is, because I believe that the one lump is, if you get the wrong rainfall after, you can have a big runoff. So I don't. And the other question I have is that it's done with contractors, so the contractors have got to spread their workload. Everybody can't be there on the 12th of February and do the fertiliser. Setback for paddock ground, take into account the higher ground and the height behind the hill. And that's what that was. If Barry wants to run that again for me, from the bottom one, is the ball there? Here we go, give us the ball.
Chase it.
So, the reason we're talking about that, we're talking about setbacks and a standard setback. So if you go from the top, if it's a big long hill of 100 metres, that's how far the water will go. If you go, like to our place, we've probably got a maximum of 20 metres elevation, that's how far the water goes. I don't believe one setback's the right application for that. So yeah. I think it's got to go farm by farm basis and management by management basis. Soil is a livelihood, and rules are not the only way to get improvement. Results of introduced new and good management practices and or rules do not have an instant result. Most of the data we're dealing with now is up to 5 years old. It leads me to the physiological zones, and we're told the best science is put along the physiological zone, and I question that, and I also have some quite, well, I'm more in favour of the freshwater management issues around that, because it's where you feed, but it leads us to question of the physiological zone, the quality of the science of the 42A report recommending the old Matara winter crop ground be increased 20 to 50 hectares, while disregarding other practical logic suggestions through the entire report. Because we were told initially the science behind it said it was high leaching and it needed to go in, but now the recommendation is increased to 50 hectares. I really have a question on the science when it does that. Sometimes in Southland it rains and intermittent streams form. Every time it rains, there's runoff somewhere, whether it's rural, town, or city. However, farmland soil has the ability to absorb moisture, whether in grass and crop. 25 millimetres of rain in a short period adds 250 cubic metres of water per hectare. So, and just because we're in Gore, always Gore is an example of an urban area. Gore is 1,252 square kilometres, the Gore urban area. And if you said that 75% of Gore was in pavement, roof and otherwise, that rain's got to go somewhere. And we're told on Tuesday that 40% goes into the sewage pond. So what I'm really coming down to the point is that to help solve the problem, if we got a house in Gore, every house in Gore, which I take an average of 180 square metres, and collected all the rain off the Gore rainfall, which is a metre a year, just under a metre a year, there'd be enough to feed the water of 900 people days at 200 litres per person per day. So there's other solutions than dragging water out of streams, dragging water everywhere, is to try and collect, save the storm water, save something like that and look at that. Now, probably summary is the 50 hectare winter crop, and we're saying that's very restrictive to the size of your farm, and we're suggesting 20% up to 20%. The slope working and the pitches, we our submission says up to 25 or 30 percent, but as long as 35%, as long as no more than, I can't remember, it was 10 or 15% of the land was over 20 degrees. About the wintering pads and the ability to have a percentage of stock. And the other thing I want to bring up at this point is that the winter period that's proposed in the plan is 5 months. That's a long time, 5 months, from 1st of May to 3rd of September. And then it's talking about we have to store all the water from our effluent storage ponds in that time. Surely it can be applied when the ground temperatures and soil moisture is correct. And the last thing I'd like to comment on is to make a permitted activity, as long as you fit the criteria of your original consent, that if you add more area to your dairy farm, that you can have the same cows cover the same area. And it has the effect of, number one, is reducing the
footprint,
and also it indirectly will have an effect of reducing the total stocking rate in Southland. Because if more areas given to the same cows, somebody won't put something else on that same land as well to do it. So with that, I thank you for your opportunity to put our views. And the other thing, I'd like to invite you, the hearing panel, to visit our farm and see how we're using best practice. The invitation's there.
Thank you very much for that.
Doug, and now I'd just like to pass on to Doug Stanley, who's done some work on the setbacks areas and how it would affect us. And he's done work on cropping ground, but the way we're set it up on these photographs, I'm going to find the right photograph in which one. Yeah, I'll get you some photographs. Sorry, don't get
Yep. Okay.